Rose had been coming to Venice since the age of 16, usually in the company of her mother, who bought an old gondolier's cottage as a retreat for summer vacations. Ezra Pound lived next door in an identical cottage, which he had shared with his mistress, Olga Rudge, since the 1920s. Pound had just been released from St. Elizabeth's Hospital for the Criminally Insane, Rose recalled, and by the time I saw him in the early 1960s, he was old and hermit-like. He had taken his famous vow of silence. We'd see the two of them, Olga and Ezra, quietly strolling in the neighborhood and having coffee at one of the cafes along the Zatere. She was diminutive and very beautiful. He was tall and dignified and always elegantly dressed. A broad-brimmed felt hat, a wool coat, tweed jacket, a flowing tie. His face was craggy and his eyes were immensely sad. When people stopped to greet them, he would stand patiently in silence while Olga made pleasantries. We never saw him speak in public, but at home we could hear him reading his poetry aloud in a strong, rhythmic voice. My mother was a fan of Pound's, so she rang the doorbell and asked if she might have an audience with him. Olga very politely told her to go away. It was no use, he wouldn't talk to anyone. We finally realized we'd been hearing recordings of Pound reading his poems. He'd been sitting on the other side of our common wall, listening quietly, just as we had. Pound died ages ago, but Olga lives on. She's over 100 now. The Lauritsen's circle of friends included both Venetians and expatriates, among them the art collector Peggy Guggenheim. Peter frequently accompanied Peggy on late afternoon rides in her gondola, which was the last private gondola in Venice. She knew every foot of every back canal, he said. She would sit in her little chair with her Lascia Apsos lounging underneath and her gondolier standing behind her on the stern deck rowing. She'd give him directions with hand signals, as if she were driving a car, without so much as saying a word or looking back at him. Peggy was notoriously stingy. She hired the city's corpse collector as her gondolier because he was available at a better price. She didn't seem to mind that he serenaded her with funeral dirges and that he was very often drunk. I went to see Peggy during her final illness, Peter went on. She was rereading Henry James. She told me she had given instructions that she was to be buried with her dogs in the garden of her palazzo on the Grand Canal. She made me promise to see that her wishes were carried out, and I did. In fact, by the time she died, 14 of her dogs were already in the garden waiting for her. Peggy was still alive when the last of them was laid to rest. During the burial ceremony, while the butler was poking around in the dirt with a spade looking for an empty spot, he unearthed Alasha Opso's skull that rolled to a stop at Peggy's feet. Peggy was sobbing into her handkerchief and didn't notice. In his study, Peter showed me the 1922 edition of the works of Henry James that Peggy had bequeathed to him. Each volume was signed with the first of her three married names, Peggy Vale. Peggy Guggenheim was never accepted by members of Venetian society, who professed to be appalled by her sexual promiscuity. But the Lauritsens had been taken up by Venetians and frequently attended Venetian parties. On the evening I first met them, Peter picked up an engraved invitation from his desk, studied it for a moment, and then glanced up at Rose with a look that seemed to ask, "Should I?" Rose nodded her assent. 12 Venetian families were giving a formal carnival costume ball in 2 weeks. The Lauritsens had been invited to come and to bring a guest of their own. When Peter extended the invitation to me, I readily accepted. "You'll see what I mean when I say Venice is really just a small village," said Rose. Before leaving, I signed the Lauritsens' guestbook, and as I did, a question that had occurred to me earlier in the evening came to mind again. "By the way," I said to Rose, "how did the Comune ever find out you had renovated the apartment downstairs?" Rose smiled conspiratorially. "Someone informed on us, apparently. We don't know who. It might have been a neighbor." "Ah," I said. "So if Venice is a village, it's a village with an edge." "Oh, absolutely," she said with a broad smile. "It definitely has an edge.